The brass in the hall needed polishing. It was a Tuesday morning, the kind that arrived with a gray, watery light that seemed to seep through the very glass of the windows rather than shine upon them. Wren stood in the foyer of the Holloway funeral home, a pail of warm water and a cloth of soft flannel in her hands, attending to the banister rail. Her father had always insisted on the shine. "A dull rail suggests a dull mind," he used to say, tapping his knuckles against the wood to hear the hollow echo of the house beneath. "And a dull mind cannot honor the dead." She rubbed the metal in slow, circular motions, watching the tarnish yield to the cloth until her own face stared back at her, pale, dark-haired, the gray of her eyes obscured by the reflection of the dim hallway. It was a ritual. Polishing the brass was something she could do without thinking. It required only elbow grease and patience, two things she possessed in surplus. It was safer than the ledger. It was safer than the office. A footstep sounded on the stairs. Wren looked up to find Selah's leaning against the newel post, a rag in his hand, moving it slowly over the brass finial at the top of the banister. He had not been there a moment before she would have heard him. His eyes were on the metal, not on her. "Stick to your routine, girl," he murmured, his voice low, almost conversational. "Some doors shouldn't be opened." He didn't look at her. He only watched the metal gleam under his rag, as though the act of polishing were the only thing that mattered. Then he was gone, his footsteps fading toward the kitchen, leaving behind the faint smell of pipe tobacco and the echo of words she could not yet unpack. The office was where the questions lived. She had spent the night before in the study, the heavy oak desk a vast landscape of leather-bound volumes and ink-stained papers. The ledger, the large, red-leather tome that sat on the bottom shelf of the filing cabinet, had been waiting for her. She had opened it. She had tried to read it. But the numbers swam before her eyes, blurring into a meaningless mosaic of debits and credits, dates and amounts. Elias had kept the books with a precision that bordered on the religious. Every entry was dated, every sum balanced to the penny, or so she had assumed. Wren set the pail down on the bottom step of the stairs. Her fingers were raw from the hot water and the abrasive polish. She wiped them on her apron, leaving streaks of yellow paste across the fabric, and turned toward the study. She could delay no longer. The silence of the house was pressing against her ears, a heavy, suffocating weight that demanded she fill it with action. The study smelled of old paper and dried lavender. The curtains were drawn, keeping the gray light at bay, leaving the room in a semi-darkness that felt appropriate for the work ahead. Wren lit the oil lamp on the desk, the flame flickering to life with a soft hiss, casting long shadows against the bookshelves. She pulled out the ledger. It was heavier than she remembered. She opened it to the middle. The pages were thick, creamy vellum, the handwriting tight and angular, Elia's handwriting. She traced the lines with her finger, reading the columns, date, name, service type, fee received. For the first hour, she read nothing but the mundane transactions of a busy trade. A casket for Mrs. Mercer, a wreath for Mr. Henderson, a simple shroud for an infant whose name was never recorded. The numbers were small, precise, unremarkable. She checked the totals at the bottom of each month, adding them up with a pencil, verifying the sums. They matched. Of course they matched. Her father had never made a mistake. But then she reached October of 1898. The entries changed. The handwriting grew slightly looser, the ink darker. And there, on the 12th day of the month, was an entry that made her pause. October 12, Mercer T. Cremation, ashes returned to family, cost 12 shillings. Thomas Mercer, the retired cooper, the man whose wake she had attended only days ago. Wren frowned. She knew the fee for a standard cremation was £8. £12 was the price for a viewing, for a casket, for the full ceremony. Why had her father charged £12 for a simple cremation with no viewing? She flipped back a page. September 28th, Collins James, cremation, ashes retained, fee, £15. Maeve Collins, her husband had been cremated without a service. Wren remembered the widow's ashen face, the white-knuckled grip on her handkerchief, and the tremor in her voice when she asked if the ashes would be ready by Friday. The fee had been listed as £15. That was the price for a mausoleum niche. Wren's breath caught in her throat. She began to flip through the pages faster, her heart beating a frantic rhythm against her ribs. She checked the dates. She checked the fees. Every cremation that had been listed as ashes retained or ashes returned to family, had been overcharged. Overcharged by amounts that ranged from 3 to 7 pounds. Small sums, negligible sums, perhaps, to a man of Elias Halloway's wealth, but not to a funeral home that operated on the razor's edge of solvency. She closed the ledger and stared at the cover. The red leather was worn at the edges, the gold lettering faded to a dull bronze. Halloway and Son, Est 1874. Her father had been stealing from the dead. No, not stealing, falsifying, inflating the costs and keeping the difference. It was a systematic fraud woven into the very fabric of the business. Every entry was a lie. Every signature was a forgery of trust. Wren felt sick. She pushed away from the desk, stumbling back against the bookshelf. Books rattled on their shelves, dust motes dancing in the lamplight. She gripped the edge of the desk to steady herself, her knuckles white. How long had he done this? How many families had paid for services they never received? How many widows had wept over empty urns, believing their loved ones were resting in the ground, when in fact their ashes had been scattered to the wind, or worse? She thought of Maeve Collins, the soft, hesitant woman who had come to the funeral home asking about the urn, asking if it was heavy enough, asking if she could hold it. Wren had assumed it was grief making her paranoid, making her suspicious of the smallest details. But what if Maeve had known? What if the urn had been light because it was empty? A knock at the door shattered the silence. Wren jumped, her hand flying to her mouth. The lamp flickered. Wren. It was Silas. His voice was loud, boisterous, cutting through the stillness of the house like a hammer blow. She exhaled slowly, smoothing her apron, wiping the polish from her fingers. She picked up the ledger and closed it, sliding it back into the drawer. She locked it with the key her father had given her, the one that hung on a ribbon around her neck. "Coming," she called out, her voice steady, measured. She opened the door. Silas stood in the hallway, his tie loosened, his sleeves rolled up to his elbows. He held a tray with 2 cups of tea, the steam rising in thin wisps. He looked tired. The gray in his hair seemed more pronounced in the dim light, and the lines around his eyes were deep trenches of exhaustion. "I brought you some tea," he said, offering a smile that didn't quite reach his eyes. "Thought you might need it. You've been in there all morning." Wren took the tray, her fingers brushed his, and she felt the coldness of his skin. "Just working," she said, "sorting some papers." Silas stepped into the room, his eyes scanning the desk, the ledger, the lamp. He lingered on the drawer for a moment, his gaze lingering on the lock. "Papers," he repeated. His tone was light, but there was an edge to it, a sharpness that Wren hadn't noticed before. "What kind of papers?" "The accounts," Wren said. "I'm catching up on the monthly reconciliation." Silas nodded slowly. He set his own cup on the desk, careful not to spill a drop. "Reconciliation. Yes, important work, very important." He moved closer to the desk, his hand reaching out to touch the brass lamp base. He began to polish it with his sleeve, a slow, rhythmic motion. "You know," he said, not looking at her, "your father was a meticulous man. He believed in order, in balance. He believed that every door had its purpose and that some doors shouldn't be opened." Wren watched him polish the lamp. The brass shone under his sleeve, reflecting the flame of the oil lamp. "What do you mean?" she asked. Silas stopped. He turned to look at her, his green eyes hard and cold. "I mean that there are things in this house, Wren, that are best left undisturbed. Your father did what he had to do to keep this business afloat, to keep us afloat. And sometimes, the truth isn't the most important thing. Sometimes, survival is." Wren felt a chill run down her spine. "Are you saying I shouldn't look at the accounts?" "I'm saying," Silas said, his voice dropping to a whisper, "that you should stick to your routine duties. The public face of the funeral home, the flowers, the arrangements. Let the numbers be, let the past be." He picked up his tea and drank it in one gulp, wincing at the heat. Then he set the cup down and turned to leave. "At dinner," he said, pausing at the door, "we'll talk, properly, about the future of this place. But for now, just polish the brass, Wren, let the brass shine." He left, the door clicked shut behind him. Wren stood alone in the study, the silence rushing back in to fill the space he had left. She looked at the ledger in the drawer. She looked at the brass lamp, shining under Silas's sleeve. She picked up the cloth and the pail. She went back to the hall. The banister was dull again. The tarnish had returned, creeping back across the metal like a shadow. She began to polish it again, her movements slow, deliberate, angry. She polished until her arms ached. She polished until the brass reflected her face perfectly, clearly, without distortion. And she stared at herself, at the gray eyes, the dark hair, the set jaw, and she wondered if she was her father's daughter, if she was Silas's niece, or if she was something else entirely. Something new, something dangerous. The house breathed around her. The clocks ticked, the brass shone. And Wren Halloway, standing alone in the hallway, felt the first crack form in the foundation of everything she thought she knew. It wasn't a crack, it was a fracture, and it was spreading. She stopped polishing. She set the cloth down, she listened to the silence, and she waited for the next knock at the door. The Morning Post arrived on a tray of tarnished silver, three envelopes, and a catalog for a Birmingham dry goods merchant that Wren discarded without reading. She sat behind the heavy oak desk in the front office, the one her father had occupied for 20 years, and opened the letter with a brass knife. The handwriting was neat, looping, the kind of penmanship that suggested a woman who had once paid attention to her lessons. Mrs. Gable, Arthur's wife. Arthur Gable had been interred on a rainy Wednesday in October, 6 months past. A small service, three attendees beyond Wren and Silas. Mrs. Gable, a nephew from Wolverhampton, and a clergyman who had seemed uncomfortable with the brevity of it all. Wren had offered the standard arrangements, the medium-grade casket, the lilies from the florist on High Street, the service conducted with the quiet efficiency her father had taught her. She had not expected a letter. She read twice. The paper was thin, the ink slightly blurred where the writer's pen had lingered too long on a word. "Dear Miss Halloway," it began, "I hope this letter finds you well. I have been meaning to write for some months, though I could never quite find the right occasion. Mr. Gable's birthday approaches in November, and I found myself thinking of the service you arranged for him. It was so peaceful, so comforting." Wren set the letter down. She picked it up again. Read the third paragraph. "I suppose people do not often thank the funeral director, but I feel I ought to. In those dark weeks after Arthur went, when the house was so terribly quiet and I did not know how to fill the hours, the certainty that he was in a better place, that his soul was at rest, free from the pain that had plagued him for so long, held me together. Your kindness in ensuring that everything was done properly, with such dignity, meant more than I can express." Dignity? Wren traced the word with her thumb. Her father had used it the way a carpenter used a level, as a tool for checking whether something was straight, whether it met the standard. He had never spoken of it sentimentally. Dignity was not a feeling. Dignity was a product. It had a price, listed in the ledger beside mahogany and brass fittings and lily arrangements. She had spent the morning polishing the brass banister rail in the foyer, the same task she had performed every Tuesday for the past week, as though scrubbing metal could remove something that clung to the surface of things. Silas had watched her from the doorway, his tie loose, his sleeves rolled past the elbow, and said nothing. He never said much when she worked with her hands. It made him uncomfortable, the way her father's discomfort had been invisible until you looked closely at the ledger entries and noticed the gaps. The letter said, "I sleep better now. I know he is at peace." Wren folded the letter carefully and placed it on the desk, next to the brass knife and the dry goods catalog she would not throw away after all. She opened the ledger. The red leather cover was worn at the corners, the gold leaf faded to a dull yellow. She turned to the entry for Arthur Gable. October 14th, Gable Arthur, age 61, cause cardiac failure, service, standard cremation. Fee, £18, remarks, family requested simplicity. Standard cremation. £18. Simplicity. Words that sat on the page like stones dropped into still water, small ripples, then nothing. But beneath the words, beneath the neat columns and the careful handwriting, was the truth her father had recorded in a different ledger, the one kept in the secondary archive room that Silas had locked and thrown away the key for, or so Wren believed. She could not trace Arthur Gable's body once it left the parlor. It seemed likely, as everyone in Oak Haven believed, that it had gone into the crematory furnace, burned to ash, and been returned to Mrs. Gable in a mahogany urn marked delivered. That was the standard procedure. That was the dignity her father sold. But the ledger entry said nothing about what came after the cremation, nothing about where the ash went. nothing about the secondary charges that never appeared on the family's bill, but appeared, regularly and in increasing amounts, in the payments from Birmingham. Wren closed the ledger. The office was quiet except for the ticking of the wall clock, a grandfather's piece, mahogany case, brass pendulum, the sound it made like a slow, deliberate breath. She had always believed in systems. Even now, with her father 3 months gone, she found herself organizing the silenced 12 hours of it before sleep, 4 before coffee, 2 between the kettle and the door. The system kept the chaos at bay. The system was all she had. She picked up Mrs. Gable's letter again and read the final sentence. "Thank you, Miss Halloway. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for giving me this peace." Wren felt something tighten in her chest, a sensation she recognized but could not name. It was not guilt. Guilt implied wrongdoing, and she had not written the ledger entries, had not collected the fees, had not signed the certificates of death that her father had prepared with a steady hand and a pen that never shook. She was not responsible for what had happened before she arrived. But she was responsible for what happened now, for the letter she had received and could not return unopened, for the peace Mrs. Gable slept in, built on a foundation she did not understand, for the ash that sat in a mahogany urn on a mantelpiece somewhere in Oakhaven, too light, perhaps, for what it was supposed to contain. Wren stood. She carried the letter to the back of the house, past the parlor where the lilies from Thomas Mercer's wake had begun to brown at the edges, their petals curling like old skin. She passed the embalming room, the door ajar, the smell of formaldehyde sharp and chemical in the corridor air. She did not look inside. She continued down the hall to the small sitting room her mother had used before she died, before the illness took her in pieces, the way illness does, slowly enough to prepare and suddenly enough to overwhelm. The sitting room was unchanged. The same rose-patterned wallpaper, the same armchair with the torn velvet on the left arm, the same small table holding a photograph of Elias Halloway in his prime white hair, brown eyes, a face that looked like it had never questioned anything. Wren set Mrs. Gable's letter on the table beside the photograph. She stood there for a moment, looking at her father's face, wondering if he had ever considered the women who wrote to thank him for their peace. Wondering if he had ever wondered what they would say if they knew. She returned to the office. She sat at the desk. She picked up the brass knife and began to sharpen it on the whetstone her father kept in the drawer, the motion rhythmic and precise, the blade catching the gray light as it turned. Outside, the wind moved through the trees behind the funeral home, and the house breathed around her, ticking and settling and enduring, as it always had, as it would continue to do whether she chose to honor it or dismantle it. The sharpening continued. Stroke, stroke, stroke. Each pass of the stone against the steel removing a fraction of metal, revealing something sharper beneath. She would write back to Mrs. Gable. She would say the right things. She would use the words her father had taught her, the ones that sounded like comfort and meant nothing at all. That was what she would do. That was what she had always done. But she did not fold the letter and put it away. She left it on the desk, face up, next to the open ledger, and she stared at the entry for Arthur Gable until the words blurred and the room tilted and the ticking of the clock became something else entirely, a countdown, or a heartbeat, or the sound of something breaking that had been held together for far too long. Wren Halloway remained seated, her gaze fixed upon the heavy oak door that partitioned the office from the embalming room, while the silence stretched taut and unbroken.